I restarted. Okay.
1, 2, 3. Oh man, that was pretty delayed. I think we'll be fine though. We'll make it happen. Busy week, Sean. Busy week. Yesterday marked 7 days on the road for us. So our first full week is out of the way.
First full week. Anything crazy, strange, or unexpected happened?
Nothing too crazy, nothing too strange. Unexpected, though, it's definitely... So there's two things that have stood out to me so far about the trip. First of all, it's way more difficult than I thought it was going to be. Like, it's been go, go, go. There's always something to do. There's always something that comes up or whatever. And it's just constantly, like... stuff going on, especially when you, I'm working a full-time job, and like balancing that with the trip and everything, it's a lot of effort. So it's way harder than I was expecting. But the second part of that is that it's way more awesome than I was expecting. It's incredible to wake up in these places and be like, oh, this is my office for the day. I'm 100 feet from the ocean and I can just listen to the waves while I work all day. Or like today we're in, I can't remember the name of this place. Blair Valley. It's called Blair Valley. It's like a wilderness down here in California, Southern California, kind of over by Joshua Tree. And it's just like I'm surrounded by these gorgeous mountains and stuff and recording a podcast. And it's pretty great. So it's like it's a lot of effort. It's a ton of effort. But man, the payoff is fantastic. So that's how I'm feeling 1 weekend. We'll see how that feels after a month or two.
No, I don't think the feeling like changes drastically. I think for me, it was a little different because it wasn't like I could relax a whole lot in those places. So it'd be like, oh, cool, there's this thing over here. Well, we got to go do this other thing now. Or, we don't have time to do that. Mostly was like what I was told or had to tell people.
There's been a fair bit of that for us as well. That, oh, we don't really have time to do that. We'd like to, but we just got to go. But really, that's... a lot of that is just because of California. Like we were starting in Northern California and heading south. So there's not like a ton of stuff kind of in that central area. So we kind of had to get to Southern California. And once we got there, parking is really difficult around LA area. So we kind of weren't there for too long. We ended up like stealth camping in Costa Mesa in this kind of fancy neighborhood. We just pulled off to the side. And I mean, we're in a Sprinter, so it's not, we kind of fit in that sort of area. So it's not like a huge deal. But we stayed there, and then we ended up getting down to San Diego, stayed there for a night right on the beach. That was really cool, and now we're in this wilderness. But it's like now we're actually where there's a bunch more campsites and places where we can park easy and just have access to RV services, as it were. And so we're going to be able to like chill in places a bit more and just kind of relax and take it in and explore the area. And this is the part I was really, really looking forward to personally. I'm very, very excited to start. Actually be out here now. Man, it's beautiful. It's a gorgeous day.
Yeah. It's cool because you can find places like that most anywhere you go. So it was also interesting driving to Vermont from California, and Jamie had never lived anywhere beyond California. And so, because we camped on the way out instead of getting hotels and stuff, we just stayed at different campgrounds along the way. And so it was kind of a similar feeling where We went through and we hit some of the major parks on the way. So it was pretty cool, like waking up on almost the side of a mountain and, you know, just around nature. But it was interesting, like going to the Midwest, because it was so different. And it was interesting, like observing her observe that, just how different it is. Like it's flat everywhere. Like you just look around and it's just flat and fields, corn and fields. And also the camping got a lot stranger. In the Midwest, so you know, on the West Coast, there's more parks and stuff that you can kind of stay at, and more like actual camping grounds where it's just like a hole cut in the thicket, and that's where you slap a tent or something. In the Midwest, it's like camping,
a lot more wilderness and that sort of thing.
Yeah, and in the Midwest is camping. Okay, well, here's a giant RV park, and here's a little lawn that we mowed, and you can put your tent over there, and that's camping.
Yeah, we're on, I believe this is BLM managed land right now, and BLM land is very prominent throughout a lot of the western states, but then as you get more and more east, people weren't doing that at the time those states were being set up, right? So there's just less and less of that. But there's still options. I'm sort of in the same boat as Jamie was, where it's like I've lived in California my entire life, and I've spent probably like 3 or 4 weeks total outside of California in my entire life. So this is like this is huge for me, and this is something I've been wanting to do for so long. And like, oh man, I'm just excited. I'm excited. I'm feeling inspired. It's the best feeling to wake up in an awesome place and then work. And just get to soak it in.
I think one of the coolest experiences we had were camping in, I'm pretty sure it was Kansas, and it was an RV park, and it was different because I don't know that she'd been to one like that. And so it looked like somebody moved a cul-de-sac from houses into RVs and just like slapped it next to this man-made lake. And
because awesome.
There's like, you know, there's like hammocks that like strung to anything, and there's like RVs with like, have you ever seen the Goofy movie? That's what it seemed like.
Yeah.
Yeah. We rolls up and there's like a bowling alley on top of that RV and stuff. So we were camping in the tent spot. But I remember that night, you know, it doesn't rain super often in California, and there's not really a lot of thunderstorms. I mean, there's certainly some, but when I lived
it's
there
nothing
for
like the, it's
3 years.
Nothing like the Midwest.
Yeah. So like the night that we spent in Kansas, it was just like a lightning storm all night, and it was a dry lightning, so it wasn't even raining.
That's awesome.
So, yeah, you could just kind of sit outside and watch the thunderheads roll in, and it just was lightning all night long in the distance, which was pretty cool because I think that was more lightning than she'd ever seen before. And I think that was the first time that she had caught a lady or a lightning bug too.
I've never seen a lightning bug. I'm so excited. That's like on my list too.
Yeah, that's hilarious. It's so funny because I grew up catching those things. And it's so interesting to me that it's just, I don't know, different experience. People have different experiences. So like I find about people who have never done that, it's like, oh, well, that's something that I did all the time because they were
right.
Always
around. There's so much stuff to experience in the world. There's just like, you just got to get out there and experience it.
Yeah. And it's cool that you have, you know, like there's work that you can kind of fall back on. I think that's also kind of a security thing too. I mean, it's nice to be around and doing stuff, but I also know that you like to be busy and need a sense of that sort of busyness. Busy might be the wrong term, but.
Well, like feeling like I'm contributing to something bigger than myself, I guess.
Yeah, totally. So I think it should be cool. I think especially if you're heading towards the East Coast, there'll be a lot of new experiences for you for sure.
Yes, definitely. The farthest I've ever actually driven, because I've been to Florida and then like the up by like Massachusetts area and that sort of thing. But the farthest I've ever actually driven before is Texas on a road trip with Charlene and her family years and years. That's like a decade ago now. That's actually almost exactly a decade ago now. Wow. So I'm really excited to drive through a lot more states. And there's so much to see even just in the states, like even just in the contiguous states. It's kind of mind-blowing.
Yeah, I guess it depends like what routes you're taking and where you're hitting and stuff in the middle too. Some of the roads can kind of really, Texas especially, because it's so straight.
Right.
You can just drive forever. And I mean, that was my experience because I drove to Dallas a lot from Alabama and Georgia. And that drive kind of sucked because I think it was just, again, it was different circumstances because it was work, but I just had done it a bunch. But I'm trying to think like any tips that I have. Like, so you're camping, right? And I guess the biggest tip that I could give you, and this is kind of common sense, I guess, but like if you see a mound of dirt that is red, just leave it alone.
like an anthill, you mean?
Yeah, well it's not even the big anthill, man. It's like little anthills. Those are the ones you got to worry about because those are fire ants.
I'll definitely keep an eye out for ants because I was reading the reviews for this place before we got here, and people were like, "There's a lot of anthills around, so be careful."
Yes,
that's funny
yes,
that you mentioned
yes.
that.
If you've never been bitten by a fire ant, it sucks real bad, and it's like they're just very aggressive. So there was one time our bus broke down, and we were just sitting at this gas station. We were all just kind of like sitting. It was kind of like a remote area. So like when I say sitting on the curb, it's not like we're sitting on the street. It was like the curb of the parking lot, and there was grass behind us. And we were just waiting for a mechanic or whoever to come fix whatever was wrong. And I saw some mounds, so I just stomped on them on my way by to sit down. And nothing came out of those ones. But then I heard people yelling, like 20 yards from me, like down, they were sitting like on the other side of the parking lot and they started screaming. So the ants came out of that hill down there and attacked them all. And it was fire ants, which was, it sucked for them, you know? But, yeah, I mean, like in Georgia too, at this house I used to live in, their whole yard was infested with fire ants. And so I could barely do anything outside, because they would just get on you, and one bite, it's just, it's more annoying than anything, because it's not like a bite and then you get the ant off you and it's done. It's like, it leaves like a sore on you.
Oh, that's terrible.
So don't bother the ants.
Don't mess with nature, man. That's just generally a good rule. Let it do its thing.
Yep. Don't mess with nature.
Observe it, enjoy it, clean up around it if people have left bad things, left garbage. But, like, don't mess with it, because it'll mess with you, too.
Yeah. Yeah, and I never really saw many spiders when I was in California. I wasn't really in a place to go looking for them either. But I have some stories about spiders from living in Alabama, that's for sure.
All right, hit me with one.
Oh, okay. Well, we're going to freak some people out. But have you ever seen that movie Arachnophobia?
Our soccer development podcast. Have I seen what?
That movie Arachnophobia.
All right. No. I'm not a fan of films like that. No.
I'm not either. But when I was a kid, I had a babysitter that watched it.
This one with the giant spiders?
No, this was the one with the jumping spiders.
Oh, okay. No, definitely haven't seen that.
So there's like a scene, okay, so cereal boxes to this day still kind of freak me out, because there's a scene where this dude puts his hand in a cereal box and he pulls a spider out of it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And another scene where this guy goes into the barn and these spiders are aggressive, so they jump on you, and they jumped on him and bit him and killed him because they were like super poisonous. But anyway, so like growing up with that, I'm not going to say a completely irrational fear, because you never know. I do hear everything called a jumping spider. But so growing up with that in the back of your mind, and so my brother and I just got home from tour, and we were playing for this guy that had this house in Alabama. And a lot of the houses in Alabama don't have basements, kind of like you might have seen in Florida too. A lot of them just don't, like, there's not an underground foundation and stuff like that. There's not a basement.
There's not really any way to do it in Florida. It'd just be full of water. Yeah.
Yeah, so we come home, we come off the tour, come off the road, and we're the only two there at the time because everyone else was still on the road. We just needed a break. So we're staying at his place, and so we get home, and I open the door, and do you know what a wolf spider is?
Mm-mm.
Oh, it's not like, it's just like a fat, hairy spider, but it's not as big as a tarantula.
Okay.
But it's just a gross spider. So I open the door, and there's just one chilling in the living room. So I take my shoe off, and I hit it with my shoe, and it's on carpet, so the thing bounces into the air and then runs off, and it like runs into the bathroom, down the hall into the bathroom. So I was like, okay, now I'm paranoid because I just hit that spider and it's mad.
Well, yeah, now it's got a grudge.
So then I look into the kitchen. So like when you walk in, open the door, you can see the living room into the kitchen, and there's another one on the floor in the kitchen. So I was like, okay, there must be some sort of infestation or something. So I hit that one dies, and then I come back out of the kitchen and look down the hall. My brother's like, I just saw one dart into our room. So there was like three of these giant spiders, probably the size of my palm. just like chilling. I killed one. One got away, and two got away because I hit that one. Then it ran into the bathroom. I never found it. And so I was just going to sleep the night. It was terrible because we were sleeping on a bunk bed, and we had sleeping bags on this bunk bed. And so I just remember as my brother, because I had the bottom bunk, as my brother was watching me crawl into my sleeping bag, he was like, just watch your feet, man.
Yeah, be careful of those feet. Oh, my God. That's horrible. I bet you those two spiders are still planning their revenge to this day.
I don't know. So that's not even the worst spider story from Alabama. But they're like, I mean, I hit it pretty hard. And he just kind of like, I imagine it made that sound like Super Mario. It was like, boing. And it just like took off.
You just compressed the legs so they just sprung back up.
Yeah, I don't like spiders. I don't like them. But yeah, so just keep your mind, like keep your wits about you. Always shake your shoes out. I'll say that. Always shake your shoes out.
Oh, I do have a minor, somewhat tech related thing that I could talk about the RV. Our electrical system, which has been holding up fantastically. So we're running a residential mini fridge off of it. we're, you know, charging both our laptops and cameras and phones and all the a drone, all the nerdy stuff that you would expect me to have in this van. And we so far pretty much haven't had to plug in. We did end up plugging in because we stayed in RV park, so it was like we might as well top off and use the electricity since it's here. But sure. Even we've had several cloudy and rainy days. Even on those, when the sun sets, we're usually like pretty topped off. So that has definitely worked out super well. Very, very happy with all the Victron stuff that we have. Still highly recommend anybody who's looking into this stuff, check out Victron. They are fantastic. But yeah, we're like sitting here in the middle. I'm pulling it up on my phone right now. We're sitting here in the middle of basically this desert. And yeah, we're at full battery, and we're receiving more solar than we're using right now, with both laptops going, the fridge going, and all that stuff.
That's amazing.
So, It's incredible, man. Solar really is like, I've always thought solar was cool, but now actually having solar and like living, using most of my energy, most of my electricity that I use personally now comes from the solar panels on the top of my van. And it's like, it's the coolest feeling in the world. I'm like a sun farmer.
And it's not even like a gigantic amount, you know, it's not even a huge amount of solar panels that you have. Which is, it's amazing to me.
I mean, it's a fair amount for a van this size. We have 680 watts, but like to run all of our electronics and stuff off and a fridge and our heater fan and all that kind of stuff. Like I'm blown away. It really does seem magical.
Yeah. Cause I've seen pictures. I think in that video that you sent me too, the drone shot in the beginning where it kind of pans up, you can see the number of panels on the top of your car, but just the idea that that's all it takes, just those things. And there's not really any waste, you know, there's not like exhaust. There's not, you're not taking anything from the actual earth. You're just absorbing something that's already coming down. That's what's cool to me. You're not taking anything. I don't know. That seems really interesting to me. That's something that I want to look more into increasingly. And I might invest in some Victron things, but I don't know. It's just so interesting. There, like, so even in this town, there's two different solar arrays. There's three. So there's one by the college. There's which makes sense because it's an environmentally focused law school, so you would think that there'd be some eco stuff going on. Sure. But there's also one maybe a mile past my apartment. There's actually a pretty sizable solar farm that I drive past every day. And I always wonder, like, where does that go? But I've noticed that quite a few houses in this town specifically actually have panels on the roof.
That's amazing. Yeah, I love driving around and seeing people with panels on the roof. It's just so cool, man. It's honestly one of the coolest feelings that I've had about the van is just the solar stuff. Just because it's like, it's one of those things that seemed like a crazy pipe dream when I was a kid, first thinking about like living on the road and running electronics on the road and that sort of thing. And now it's like actually my day to day reality, which is a really neat feeling.
Yeah. I'm glad you're liking that feeling. I don't know. There's something about having only a few things that you need, you know, and you really only need a few things, and just having those close by, and then having freedom to kind of do what you want or be where you want to be. I mean, obviously, with like work, there's some expectation there to do things and get things done, but still, like, I don't know. That's something that I enjoyed a lot.
Yeah, exactly. I need that feeling anyway of having stuff that I need to get done by a certain time. Because, I mean, when I wasn't working for a couple months while we were prepping for the van and all that, and just kind of in a transitional period, I missed it not all the time, definitely not all the time, but a lot of the time I was like, there's something missing. Like I need that productivity, that feeling of contributing, like I was saying. So I think it's a really nice balance. And I mean, it's hopefully more and more companies start allowing people to be remote, because I think you can get really good work out of people. And I think you can have people that are much happier.
I've always just kind of wanted a small place. For a long time, I didn't really care about having a place. Like the thought of having a house or anything like that just was not, if it entered my mind, it was like I don't really want to do that kind of thought. It was never like I want to have a bunch of stuff, if that makes any sense. I don't know, just that there's something that comes along with that freedom, like you're saying, of like you can grab everything you have and go somewhere else when you need a change.
Yeah, And I mean, like I've said, this is something that I've wanted to do since I was a little kid, since I was probably 10 or 11. But what's funny is that I never like connected it to the actual doing of the thing, which in my case meant getting rid of a ton of stuff. So, Charlene got married, we were 18, we got married real young, but by the time we were 20, 21, 22, we owned a 3-bedroom house and it was full of stuff. Like it's amazing how fast that happens to you. And it took us 5 years to get rid of enough stuff to the point where we could actually fit it in here. And honestly, I don't miss any of it. Like it just feels so much better to have only the essentials and have stuff that I really, really like and love, enjoy you. Like I super enjoy using all these things and get real tangible benefits out of almost everything in this van. Like we have empty cabinets in our 22-foot van, which is a pretty good feeling.
Yeah. That's pretty cool.
It's just mind blowing to me how easy it is to acquire stuff and acquire a house that is way more than what you actually need and just pile all these things up that really end up becoming more of a burden than they are helpful or useful or enjoyable in any way.
I think some people call that technical debt.
Took it and turned it.
No, but we're that's why I like, I really, that's one reason why I really admire people have mindsets like friend of the show, Zach Kelly. That's something I always admired about him was that before he spent any money, like a penny, he would read all the reviews. He would like basically have like a pros and cons list. He would have, here are all the situations where I would use this thing. Are there any situations where this would be useless to me before purchasing anything? So whenever we'd be hanging out, he'd be doing all this stuff, you know? And I really liked that idea. So for example, thinking about paring down when you're looking at a computer, you know, like what kind of computer would work best for me with work, with like leisure activities, with whatever, you know? So you do all the research there. Or like, for example, guitar stuff. So I don't play professional anymore, but I still like to play and I still like to record. So what kind of gear do I need to keep it simple and keep it small, but still do everything that I need to do without having too much stuff? And I think that's kind of like what I'm working on a little bit now, because especially like moving back to the West Coast next year, I still want to have a bunch of things. But I think in general, I like the idea of having a few devices or a few things that I can use in many situations.
Yes, absolutely. My end game right now, my goal for stuff and like, just what I have is if I could fit everything or darn near everything into like a roller carry-on bag plus a backpack, just all my stuff. That is like, that's the holy grail for me. That's the real end game at this point. And I'm really pretty close. There's definitely work that has to be done, but it's like, you think about that amount of space and it sounds really small when you first consider it, but it's like that you can actually fit a lot of things in there. I mean, just think of like all of the tools that just your smartphone alone has replaced over the last decade. Yeah. And it's like, that's already pounds and pounds less stuff and you have more capability. And I mean, I can edit movies on the go on my laptop easily. I can do all my work on this laptop. I have a tiny little hotspot for internet. I've got, you know, a little drone that can slide in a backpack easily for camera stuff and then a bunch of other camera gear. But like, that's like a couple pairs of clothes. What else do you need? That's it. Good to go.
Yeah. I just got 3 more shirts to replace 3 old shirts that I'm getting rid of. And they're the exact same size, the exact same brand. And they're just black t-shirts. I like that idea a lot. It's cool, like, so thinking about music and thinking about, like you said, your phone replaces so many different things you used to need. Now people might throw some shade at me for saying this, but even back when I was touring a lot, I did most everything digitally. So I mean, when I was on the road playing live, we had backline and stuff, so that wasn't really an issue, or I didn't have to like always have a bunch of crap with me all the time.
What's backline?
I would always run across people. What's that?
What's backline?
Oh, backline. So like if you have, you can add backline. Basically backline is gear that's provided for you for the vendor, from the vendor or the promoter. So you could say,
I see.
we need two Fenders, or we need a Fender and a Vox, or we need like a Fender and a Marshall. And they would do their best. You wouldn't always get what you asked for. Sometimes you get real trash, but you know, it's sometimes it's easier than hauling a large amount of gear yourself.
Right. Definitely.
And you don't have to worry about it getting stolen, because that's always a thing. People's bands will be having like a full on trailer just get jacked. A dude that I know a lot, like, had their van and their trailer stolen. Someone stole both of them.
Oh, brutal.
Everything.
Wow.
And Fender and Orange actually donated some stuff to him, which was pretty cool. But so like these days, obviously there's people will say like, oh, the feel is different. There's like, it doesn't have as much soul and doesn't have as much dynamics, et cetera. But the software is like so good that no one's going to know besides maybe you, and you can learn how to play with it and you can still enjoy it.
Right.
So people are like rolling around with a lot of people, like not a ton of people use just their straight laptop. They usually have just like a rack unit, like whether like, I think one of the most popular ones now is like an Axe FX, or I actually have a Pro Tools. What's that company that makes Pro Tools? I have an effects unit, a rack unit. So I could put that in a box and I could play live with it. I could play in the studio with it. I can play at home with it through a stereo system, you know? So that's like a device that saves me a lot of space, because it replaces all of the individual pedals. It replaces the need to have a giant like PA system. It replaces the need to have like a dedicated recording setup, you know, and microphones and stuff like that. So that's like a perfect example of a device that saves me a ton of space.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And that really, it reminds me of this article. It was linked on Daring Fireball, like, oh my God, probably 8 years ago or something. This was a long, long time ago before we met. And it was this idea of, I'll send this to you so we can get it in show notes, but it's this idea of what the author called a perceptual cliff. And he explains it really well and really concisely. So I definitely check that out in show notes if you haven't heard of this. But the idea is, people are always like, oh, what does it matter if Apple keeps making these laptops thinner and lighter and all that? It doesn't really affect my day-to-day experience with it in any way. And that might be true for one model to the next, but you reach a point when you keep making these improvements, you keep making these changes, where it's like, oh, all of a sudden you kind of drop off an edge where it's like, yeah, this is totally different now. This completely changes my workflow. Mm-hmm. And so that kind of with digital effects, it's like, okay, you have this pedal, but it doesn't sound that great, and it's just not the same. But then they keep iterating on that and iterating on that year after year, and releasing these new pedals that get better and better and better. And it's, suddenly it's like, oh, I have a whole studio in my box, and I can get any tone I want and carry it around pretty much anywhere. Yeah. And it's like, oh, this actually, these incremental changes do stack up over time, and then eventually it completely changes the way I look at whatever this thing is. And that's kind of my case with solar too, where it's like, this is way too expensive for me to do. This is way too expensive, and I there's no way I'd be able to run all these things. But then all the electronics that I carry around have way better battery lives and are way more efficient, and everything is becoming more efficient, and now it is feasible for me to run pretty much my entire life for days and days and days at a time only off of solar. And so it's those incremental improvements across everything that really do add up and combine and make it's the whole is greater than the sum of its parts or whatever.
Yeah. And I guess to the point where you mentioned earlier, where you said in some cases it even expands your capabilities, or it gives you new possibilities that you weren't able to, like things that you couldn't do before. There's a guitarist named Eric Johnson who really, I think the pedal that he liked, if I'm remembering correctly, was called a fuzz face. And so he had all these fuzz faces that he would use, but he only liked them if he was using a battery to power them. So all of these little fuzz faces had different batteries in them to affect the nuances of the tone. And you fast forward to like these days, most of the tone plugins, I use one called Helix Native. And so you can actually click on an amp, flip the amp around, and you can adjust what's called the sag. Because it's like
voltage sag. Yeah. You're like, so yeah, if you're in if you're at a show where they've got like Edison bulbs or something, you'll actually see the bulbs kind of dim opposite of the guitar playing.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so you can literally turn you, like, emulate that. That's amazing.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh my God.
So even down to the sag, down to like, so you could like, so like a lot of players will get an amp, and one of the most important things they'll switch out is the power stage, or like the power supply inside. So it's like that big copper looking square thing that you might, if you've seen it before. And so what they'll do is they'll buy like nicer, because some of the cheaper ramps have just cheaper components. So if you swap those cheap components out, you in effect have the sound quality of a more expensive piece of hardware.
Right.
And the software, you know, granted, people will always argue it's not the same, but you can do that in the software. You just click a thing and be like, oh, I want this model or I want that model. And it's just like, I mean, 99% of the people, when they listen to the tone, they can't tell the difference. Like, I wouldn't be able to tell the difference these days. I can't hardly tell the difference. You put it in the mix, no one's going to know.
Right. No, definitely.
And you go live, you're in a room, you know, whether it's a big room or a small room, nobody's going to know.
And well, the room is going to affect that tone so much more than anything else, really, anyhow. Because like every room is going to sound completely different, and it's just the whole there's like so many variables that go into all these things that it is kind of one of those, like, yeah, I mean, maybe it is a little different, but also, is that necessarily a bad thing?
Exactly. Yeah.
When you consider all the benefits that you get from doing things digital.
And this is coming from a guy that would, like, I would use masking tape on my amps and my pedals, and I would draw like notch diagrams, like, for people, if I wasn't setting it up, if someone else was setting it up, I'm like, you make sure this knob is dialed to this direction. Like, exactly. So like, I mean, the digital realm, you would just like save a snapshot of it. And
get your presets at a button. Yeah.
There you go. Yeah. So I don't know. I'm really into that idea, like the idea of minimalism and stuff like that. Devices. I know that you were a big into that on the kitchen stuff too. Because Zach and I would always be sending ourselves stuff in Slack, and you're like, nah, it's not necessary. All you need is a cast iron skillet.
Well, that's like a real Alton Brown inspired thing. He hates unitaskers. You got to have stuff that's like, that you can use for a bunch of different scenarios. That's just kind of, I'm taking that idea, I guess, and applying it to everything in my day-to-day life as much as possible.
I don't know. I still maintain that the breakfast station is maybe one of the best inventions I've ever seen.
Good old breakfast station.
The Fallout 4 inspired breakfast station. Yeah. Maybe now I just need to want to clean my apartment out now.
Get rid of stuff, man. Just start giving things away, throwing things away that can't be given away, recycling things where you can, repurposing things. Just got to make it happen, man. That's the only way to do it. The only way out is through.
Yeah. That's true. That's true.